WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk, coming to you live from Broadcast House. Thank you so much for keeping your Radidio dial set to where it is. We have a great show lined up for you. I think I say that to ad nauseum every week, but it's true. We do our best to make sure that if we don't have to, we don't want to replay any clips, unless it's something that is requested by the listenership. So we try to have a different segments and keep it lively, and also keeps Larry Nelson, my fabulous producer, on his toes. As we go through this. In studio already here is our first guest as State Representative Kathy Lenatra, representing the 12th Plymouth District, is here already.
Good evening, Kevin. Great to be here as always.
And also joining the conversation for this evening with the representative and myself is Lieutenant James Creed. And he is not only a canine officer, but he works for the Plymouth County Sheriff's Department. So, Lieutenant, welcome to the radio program.
Thanks, Kevin.
So, that's a tease of the first segment this evening, which will be coming up in just a few moments, right after traffic. And following their segment, we have Bobby Wong. And Bobby is with the family that owns the Kowloon Restaurant. Mm. And they are going to be there's going to be an official launch party for the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association to be taking place tomorrow at the Kowloon. And we're going to talk a little bit about the formation of that group and what it means. And Bobby, who is his family owns the Kowloon, they've done a great job in putting some of the things that they put forth, not only the food, but some of the different guests that they host there. We'll look forward to talking about that and more. Yes.
Did you know that his brother is a state representative?
Donald? Or,
yes.
Or
yes, Donald Wong is the state representative.
Yeah. It so happens that the guest speakers for tomorrow, that segment, that launch party, Donald, Taki Chan, Keiko Oral, Bobby Luz, and Ming Tsai also participated in that particular, going to participate in that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
That'll be great.
Absolutely. Hour number two, we will speak with Michelle McGrath. She's not only an author, we are looking forward to wishing her a happy birthday. Her cookbook actually turns one. We'll talk with her about
wonderful.
That.
Wonderful.
But Michelle also has a public relations firm. And so she's going to be joining me to talk a little bit about the numerous things that they're going to be coming up. We'll talk. She'll even talk a little bit about the Plymouth Patuxet pie, the pumpkin pie contest.
The pumpkin pie contest. I hope I'll be there for that.
Well, you missed it. It was
the other day. I wasn't invited. I love pumpkin pie.
Yeah, there was a contest, and she's going to give us the details on that. But we're going to talk about some other great events that are going to be coming up in the in and around the South Shore. So we'll look forward to doing that. Talk with her, and then finally, Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan will join us, and the mayor will chat with us about a number of things. It's my goodness, a little over a week since he was reelected. We'll talk about city elections and also the annual holiday parade. He's going to step off the 35th annual. We'll talk a little bit about that and more. But right now, time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadways. One final time, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShop.com. Actually, it's, yeah, it's Brennan, I was almost going to say the MA. That's not in there anymore. So it's BrennanSmokeShop.com with locations Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and, drumroll please, Hudson, New Hampshire. Joining us for the final traffic report is Lisa DeMilo. How are things out on the highways and byways?
Well, Kevin, first say hi to Bobby Wong, dear friend of mine, grew up with him. Best Chinese food in the world.
Yes, indeed.
And right now, not so good on Route 3 south. You're slow from the expressway to Union Street. You're heavy approaching a crash near Hedges Pond Road. The expressway southbound is inching along from the tunnel to Columbia Road. You get a little bit of running room, but then you're back in it from Granite Ave to the split. Northbound, you're on the brakes from Furnace Brook to Morrissey Boulevard. 93 south is tied up after Logan Express to Route 24. And Route 24 south, spotty delays from 93 past Route 139 and down past 495. This report is sponsored by Generator Supercenter. Get a free estimate on Generac automatic standby generator from Generator Supercenter, the nation's number one Generac generator dealer. Call 978-481-8331. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I know a lot of companies out there are having a hard time filling their positions. Well, we're not one of them. We don't have any positions because our squad is full. My people came right back to work after quarantine and they've been here ever since. Vax, no vax, my people don't care. They love what they do, they love doing it for you, and I love them for it. Brennan's Smoke Shop is a small, family-owned and operated chain. My employees are my family. We're the Brennan's Smoke Shop family. This year, a special super-duper happy Thanksgiving to Chris, Mike P., Justin, Hannah, David, Brady, Jen, Linda, Amy, Carrie, Thomas, Oren, Rachel, Kiara, Katrina, Mike M., Jane, Jess, Jackie, John Paul, Jason, Heidi, Johnny, Jeffrey, my wife Mal, Mom and Leo, and last but not least, our new addition to the squad, Joshua in Rainham. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older. Proper ID is required.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, as we teased earlier, State Representative Kathy Lenatra here for the State House Report. It has long been a staple on this radio program to have the variety of state reps, state senators, any of the constitutional officers who'd be willing to come in at the beginning of the radio show. We've had great success. And, of course, the representative actually reached out to me. Oddly enough, it was as though we were on the same. I thought about, I'm like, going, should I ask her? Because it's kind of her turn somewhere. But then she reached out. She goes, I have a fantastic idea for a segment, and it's a very important segment. I'll let you take it from there.
Thank you, Kevin. It is a very important segment, and I've actually mentioned this bill, I think, a few times on your show with Rep. Sullivan and Rep. Moschino. True. And we had the hearing on this bill last week, and I was fortunate enough to have my friend, Jimmy Creed, Lieutenant Jimmy Creed, testify, and he is actually one of the reasons that I filed this bill. He came to me with his story and this bill that is kind of, it's out of Colorado, correct?
Correct.
It kind of mirrors the Colorado bill, and we sat down several times and discussed it with his colleagues and came up with H3845, and it's an act relative to the well-being of law enforcement officers after involvement in a critical incident. And, you know, the way we defined a critical incident is a traumatic event that may cause powerful emotional reactions in people involved or exposed to the event, including the line of duty of death or life-threatening injury of an officer. I'm twisting my tongue today. Suicide of an officer, multiple casualty incidents or disasters, significant stressful incidents involving children, incidents involving life-threatening injuries or death of a family member, or significant of another officer. So there's many things in this, but I wanted to bring Lieutenant Creed here so he could explain his story. And I really think when you listen to his story, you'll understand why this is so vitally important, especially now. It's always been important, but after this pandemic, I think it's exacerbated so many mental health issues amongst our whole population. So thank you for letting us come on today, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank both you, and I want to thank you, Lieutenant, for, I know this is a serious and sensitive item, so I appreciate you coming in and us having a conversation about this. This bills, legislation like this are important when it comes to well-being, especially folks who are serving us in law enforcement.
Thanks for having me.
So if you would, what has something, did something take place with you in regards to a similar situation?
Yeah, so in 2016, I was out for my 35th birthday with my wife at the Bertucci's in Taunton at the Galleria Mall, and an assailant came in and stabbed a waitress, stabbed a teacher that tried to intervene, and ultimately I had to intervene and stop him.
Yeah, I think we all recall that. That was a shocking set of events, and knowing that that had taken place. After being involved, I mean, what happened? What were some of the things that you had to deal with as a member of law enforcement?
So I lucked out on that night. I have a friend, former canine officer, Bobby Schwartz from Taunton PD. He's the head of the Semlec Critical Incident Support Team. And he was working that night. So I just asked if Bobby was working because he's a friend. And he came out and he kind of introduced me to the concept. He brought his team out. They sat us down, talked to us at the station, and they set us up for some aftercare. We went into Boston, spoke with them, and it really, really helped.
Now, is this what resonates with you, Representative, in regards to the lieutenant's story and what he had to deal with?
So some of the story that I hope that he'll share with you is how he actually reacted after what happened. So I don't want to tell his story, but he had to actually shoot the assailant to save everyone in that restaurant. And the way that the stress of the aftermath, if you don't mind, Jimmy.
Sure. Yeah, so immediately after we had the team come out, we actually went to the hospital. They monitored us for stress, checked us out, gave us something to help us sleep. The next day wasn't too bad at first. We had friends, family over throughout the day. But at some point after everybody left, the surge of adrenaline kind of has some effects on the body. So I ended up pretty much on my bathroom floor, doubled over for an hour or two, not really knowing what was going on. Later found out that's basically from the surge of adrenaline, kind of need someplace to go, and is a lasting effect. So one of the best things about talking to people, talking to other officers that were involved, talking it out with the clinician, is finding out that that's natural. So a lot of officers are afraid to say anything. They don't want people to know what happened. There's a little bit of a stigma on mental health treatment, unfortunately, still, but we're trying to erase that and get people the help they need.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about this program. What are some of the things that the particular program it offers or will offer? Because that's what we're looking for here, is this wellness bill, right?
Yes, yes. So, you know, there are procedures in place right now, but they're at the discretion of the chief, really. And you may have a progressive chief that doesn't really feel, you know, that moves us forward and understands that the officer needs help, and you may have a chief that's been around for quite a bit and has that still mentality, and I always say this up, like, suck it up, buttercup, you know, I've said that before. What this really does, it gives a precise steps. It gives concrete steps on what to do with the officer. If you want to say some of those steps, Jimmy.
Yeah, so one of the things is pre-incident prep. We call it resiliency training. Kind of teaches officers what they're going to deal with if and when they're involved in an incident. And then an important thing is on scene itself, to have somebody there to take the officer aside, take them to the hospital. Most departments do that now, but there are some, unfortunately, that don't. And then just ongoing mental health treatment for the officer, their family, if they need it, which was very important for me. because your spouse often doesn't know what's going on. Some people keep things bottled up. My wife was with me in our incident, but if it had happened at work, some incidents your spouse might not even know about. So it's good to get them involved. And then the return to work, I was very lucky. Sheriff McDonald was very supportive. They let me take as much time as I needed, and they let me ease back into work. I eased back in just training the dogs and working, and then started working full shifts. But there are some departments that really don't have any experience with it, where people are rushed back to work, and it's a mistake.
So you feel that setting these guidelines, something for everybody to follow, well, maybe there may be department heads who aren't, you know, that there are individuals who may have encountered or had to pull the service revolver and take action, and then having to seek some kind of assistance, knowing that you had somebody who was understanding and you have a department that's saying, okay, we don't need to rush you. Your mental health is important. This is something that's going to basically be kind of a guidelines for correct. Those who have never dealt yes. with it before
mm-hmm.
and will be able to kind of follow these. And are these, do you feel that looking over some of the program and some of the steps, these are things that you were able to follow and be able to realize yourself as you were going through it?
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't really have anything in place. We did have peer support available. When I started, it was more through the fire side of the house. And I can tell you just the way police and fire are, we're all friends, but we don't necessarily talk about certain things. Yep. So one of the things with peer support is you get somebody that is more closely related to the job you do. So I really lucked out. I had someone that was former canine, so very, very close to what I do. But for corrections, it's good to have a correction officer, because even corrections and police, there's a little bit of a disconnect. Mm-hmm. Police to fire. So we try to get somebody involved every step of the way that has been in your shoes before.
What would you say was the most important part of being able, not only going through this, because that's the toughest part, is living through this and not being sure at certain points, but then being able to kind of testify, give your insight on it to kind of help craft this legislation and hopefully be something that is passed favorably out of committee?
Well, it's something that the support my wife and I got really helped us, so it's something we want to pass on. And like I said, I had a very good friend that helped me. I've referred a few people since then, and it's just trying to help as many officers as possible, because there are major traumatic events, but there's also small things. There's things we do on a day-to-day basis that add up. So some people might think it's only something like an officer-involved shooting or a death, but you go to enough scenes with a child that's injured, a child that's dead, or enough violent things, and it just snowballs, and it can have a very bad effect on you.
Could that still happen to you to this day? Is it a matter that you're still trying to stay on top of this if you do have a similar event that it may trigger certain feelings again?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an ongoing thing. One thing with peer support is you just reach out when you need to. Like I said, I go through with the SEMLEC team, and one of my good friends is on the team, so for me, it's very easy because it's just a conversation with a friend, and that's really all you need. You just need to unload sometimes, talk to somebody that understands. It's good. My wife was involved in it, so we talk often, but there are certain things that she might not understand. She's a nurse, so she gets it to a point, but we don't have the exact same experiences.
One of the things, Kevin, that I really like this about this bill, too, there's ongoing mental health services, so you have follow-up for a professional, which I feel there's not a lot of follow-up. And as Lieutenant Creed said to me once, and I'll never forget this, and I've used it many, many times, is hurt people hurt people. So we really need to help our first responders and our law enforcement, because they're dealing with things every day. And who are they going to unleash to? You know that I'm married to a law enforcement, someone in law enforcement as well. I don't understand his job, just like he doesn't understand my job. So he needs that outlet as well.
And again, if you are tuned in, we're fortunate to be speaking with State Representative Kathy Lenatra as well as Lieutenant James Creed, and we're talking about House Bill 3845. It's an act relative to the well-being of law enforcement officers after the involvement in a critical incident, depending on line of fire, if a service revolver has to be fired, or just something that happens that is going to have long-term effects. Do you find yourself, Lieutenant, being more of a peer mentor now? Do you feel that you've kind of, you're at a point where you can give back to any officers who have gone through it as of late and help them through their time?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I've been to the training to actually be a part of the peer support teams. I'm not quite there yet, but one of the things that I think is helpful is just sharing the story and encouraging other people to go and speak.
So what happens now that we've had the testimony? Does there need to be any more done in regards, or it's just a matter of waiting and seeing what the committee will do?
Yes, so we had a testimony. We had quite a few people testify and send in written testimony for this bill, and now it will be voted on by the committee, and we're hoping it will be voted favorably out of the committee.
So, okay, let's say it's voted out favorably,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you happen, as the individual who crafted the bill, would you have any idea as to what will happen next, or will it... or are you contacted saying, okay, this is what's being considered right now? We have another piece of legislation that's similar to it that we're thinking about, you know, having them go
so
together.
It's like interesting bundling. That you say that, because yeah. there was another bill by my colleague, Tammy Govea, Dr. Tammy Govea, and we spoke about it. Hers isn't as, what would you say, structured as ours, would you say? Wasn't as
right,
structured.
Right, yeah, very similar. I think this... from what I've seen across the country, this is probably the most comprehensive bill. So the bill from Colorado specifically related to an officer-involved shooting, but when I spoke to Representative Lenatra, we decided to expand it to all critical incidents.
And knowing that we're also, let's not forget, last year, dealing with COVID,
mm-hmm.
right? That it is stress in itself, but also knowing that there was a call for reform for law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Has that had any effect on yourself and other officers, especially when it comes to doing your job and then questions about your job?
Yeah, the stress definitely adds up. One of the things I spoke about before the committee is 1 in 15 officers will basically deal with depression at some point, and that can come on for any number of reasons, but you picture someone who's going through depression or going through post-traumatic stress that now has to go out and deal with the public, and they're dealing with that unchecked. You're much more likely to lose your cool, lose your temper. You're not going to be quite as sharp mentally. You might not have as much rest, so you're not there physically. So it's really important to just get people to take care of themselves.
How does it differ for you having a four-legged partner in that instance? Is it different for you there?
As far as
handling, you know, worry not only about yourself, but mm-hmm. also your partner.
Yeah, the dog is actually a great way for me to de-stress, because we like to joke sometimes. Basically, we get paid to play with dogs, right? So it's a pretty good job. The Sheriff's Department, we're very lucky because we deal with the law enforcement side of the house, and we deal with basically forest protection for the facility. So we are just out in our car with our dog. I spend more time with the dog than I do my family.
That's the same in my household.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's definitely a therapeutic. Would that be sound
Absolutely,
about right?
Yeah.
So you kind of feel as it now you've always been a canine officer?
So I started in the jail. I did about 2 years in the jail, and I've been on canine since 2007.
Excellent. And you love every moment of it, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
Anything else we want to touch upon? Anything that I may not have asked or we haven't asked yet?
I'm so grateful that you let us come on to just discuss this, because I really think it's a great piece of legislation. And, you know, we did have police reform. And I'm one that thinks that we do always need to evolve. We can't always stay the same. We always need to evolve. But we also have to bring in awareness to the mental health of our law enforcement officials.
What are some of the things that through speaking with peers and going through this process have you learned in regards to be able to control or be able to manage if you are feeling as though you're in distress or... you're not happy?
Well, it's just knowing that you can pick up the phone and that somebody's there.
Right.
Massachusetts is pretty good. We're ahead of the curve on a lot of things. It's just, like we were saying, every department isn't exactly the same. It's not necessarily as structured. So just getting everybody to the same level, let's say this area's on, Semlex, awesome. Metrolec has a team. They're very good. The Department of Corrections has a team. But getting everybody to realize that, like I said, when I went through, we heard about it from the fire perspective. And I can tell you when I sat in the room and heard that, in the back of my mind was kind of like, yeah, I don't really see myself sitting down and talking to a fireman about this, but it definitely helps to have an actual peer.
Right, and depression is no joke. And if you can find that one person who can connect with you, it's definitely very, very important.
I agree.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. Now, you and I have already teased the fact between us that We'll have you back on next week.
I'm looking forward to it.
Working on another segment. Lieutenant, I want to thank you for coming in. And anything that you want to say in closing or as we wrap up this segment?
No, I just thank you for having us in and giving us a chance to talk about this. And I look forward to helping see this bill all the way through.
There is one thing that disappoints me, though, Lieutenant. I would have preferred. I think the news department would have too.
Dog.
If you brought your partner in,
you know what?
Big dog fans here. Myself and Christine.
Next
James.
Time,
okay.
Christine James has met my husband's former dog.
Really?
Yes, I think he ate of her news. Ate her paper scripts. Or something, and she tells a funny story about it. But I just also want to thank Lieutenant Creed, you know, for telling his story.
Yes,
I think it's so important.
So
the more you tell it, the more we can erase that stigma.
Well,
so
I look
thank
forward
you.
To the next time you're here, and of course, and your partner's name is?
So I have two. I have Heath and Boeing.
Well, we'll have to have one or the other in one of these times.
Absolutely.
Excellent. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we are going to speak with Bobby Wong from the Kowloon Restaurant in just a few moments. You are tuned into 95.9 WATD Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, it's all about the Boston Music Awards. We'll take a look at some of the nominees in this year's Boston Music Awards. You can vote for your favorites right now at bostonmusicawards.com. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and always streaming at 95.9 WATD.com.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. And we're going to talk a little bit about a launch party, an official launch party taking place tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. This is going to be at the Kowloon Restaurant, Route 1. North Saugus, and there's a list of guest speakers as we are going to see the launch of the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association joining us to talk a little bit about not only the event, but talk a little bit about the formation of this organization is one Bobby Wong. Mr. Wong, welcome to Monday Night Talk, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on.
I will tell you that initially when I was speaking with Miss Birmingham, I did reach out initially to see if either Keiko Oral or Ming Tsai could come on. And then when she told me about you and your family and the Kowloon, I've been to the Kowloon. Who doesn't love the Kowloon? I said, let's make it happen.
Okay, thank you. So being the third choice isn't bad. I like that.
Absolutely not. But what's important here is delivering the message about the formation of the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association and this official launch party. If you will, tell us a little bit about the formation of the association.
Actually, I was not one of the founders. I came in maybe just a few months ago. But this was, I really have to give credit to, there's about five founders. And they actually got together pre-pandemic, and they saw a need. I guess they had a brainstorm, and they realized there was a need for restaurant owners to possibly have a voice in terms of not only a voice, but an advocate that would help Asian restaurants, and specifically, you know, do a better job running their restaurants, and not only that, but being also an advocate for things that goes on in the state house and coming down the way, and you know, serve safe, certification, things like that. And, you know, naturally there is a language and cultural barrier initially when people start out. And they found that there was a great need to assist restaurant owners in the Asian community. And so these five founders, if I can just list their names, is Su Miao Chen. She owns a restaurant, Su Miao Kitchen, in Cambridge. Xiao Yan Huang. She owns a Boston Web Power design company. Jason Yu, he owns a bunch of restaurants called Genkiya Sushi Restaurants. Huming Gao, who's actually retired. Well, he helps out, but he is retired. He's going to be our vice president of government affairs. And Andy Kwong, who owns a Samurai Sushi Express in the Park Plaza building in Boston. These five individuals had great vision and passion to do something for the Asian community. And they got together pre-pandemic, like I mentioned, and the pandemic hit. It kind of set things back. And once we got into a better place a few months ago, a friend of mine, you know, asked if I'd like to join. And I said, I'd love to join. And the next thing I knew is they accepted me. And I'm part of the team to hopefully have a grand launch party, even though it's been over a year in coming. And the Kowloon Restaurant, which is my family's restaurant, is going to be hosting it tomorrow evening at 6:30. And it's going to be I think it's just about sold out. We're going to have 300 to 400 people tomorrow night at the restaurant.
Where do things stand as far as membership, and how important is it to stimulate membership in the organization post-pandemic?
Definitely. That's the key, is to get membership, because without membership, you're not going to have the ability to do too much. And it's people like yourself that's putting me on the radio and hopefully get the message out that it's going to be a great vehicle for Asian restaurant owners to seek help, assistance, network. There's a host of many things that that this organization is going to do. We are also partnering with the Massachusetts Restaurant Association, so we have great resources with the Massachusetts Restaurant Association, not only with information, advocacy, public relations, professional development, you know, all the great courses and classes that is offered, you know, network and marketing. There's just so many things because we're partnering with the Massachusetts Restaurant Association. It gives us a lot more ability to reach out to members and offer a lot more to our membership. And that's the key, is to drive membership, not only to sustain the organization, but it's basically driving membership so that people realize that we're a great resource, and hopefully going forward a great resource for helping them. And, you know, having a voice in some situations that might be specifically not just for Asian restaurants, but all restaurants, you know, the more people you have having a voice and banding together, the more influence, and, you know, that you can have in terms of trying to steer things in a positive way.
I would. It's interesting you mentioned the Massachusetts Restaurant Association. We have had members from that organization on here in the past to kind of talk about, you know, certain bills and legislation that they would be, you know, lobbying for when it came to the betterment of restaurants here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Do you kind of see this newly formed organization doing something similar like that, getting on board with legislation?
Yeah, I definitely see it in two ways. One is we're going to drive membership. So people that may not have wanted to join the Massachusetts Restaurant Association because of the fact that they were maybe, you know, thought it was intimidating to join, especially if you're a small Asian business that may not speak the language well. There's a cultural differences. But because that we're going to be offering a much better face or opportunity that people might be willing to join, we're just going to add on to the base of the Massachusetts Restaurant Association through MARA, which is the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association. So that alone, we're going to increase numbers. And in addition, the second benefit besides increasing numbers when it comes to something that would pertain to all restaurants, no matter what type of restaurants. We're also going to hopefully increase a lot more Asian members and restaurateurs that might find specific, you know, Asian-specific problems that we might face in the business, that because we have not three or four members of the restaurant association at the Massachusetts, but now we might have hundreds, okay? This will just give us a bigger voice and more influence, and hopefully driving the conversation so that people will notice that we do have specific issues and problems that we want to face, that have to face.
And you know, and knowing again that this is taking place up at the Kowloon, up on the North Shore, again, this isn't just for organizations or for restaurants that are in the Boston area or north of Boston, but you're trying to reach out to restaurants that are here on the South Shore and, you know, the western part of the state as well, correct?
Correct. The reason why the Kowloon was chosen is, well, first of all, it's
a great place.
We have a big room. I appreciate that. Well, we have a big room. It's fairly well known, so that we could hopefully drive people to want to come here. And we have free parking. We were thinking about a place in Boston, a few places maybe in other areas, and parking was a big issue. Because it's free parking, people will have to travel, definitely. But because it's free parking, we're hoping that people will be willing to travel to the North Shore. You brought up a great point, you know, that it is a situation where you have Western Mass, you have the South Shore. And we did a great meet and greet prior to tomorrow's event. We had it at the White Horse Tavern. Doug Bacon, who owns the White Horse Tavern in the Austin Brighton area, he was so generous to offer his place. So what we did was we did a neighborhood, if you want to call a regional, but Austin Brighton has a lot of Asian restaurants. We did a regional meet and greet where people could come in and, you know, we can introduce them to the Asian Restaurant Association. We had a great turnout, 40, 50 people. And again, like I said, Doug Bacon from the White Horse Tavern was phenomenal. He donated his place and treated us to food and drinks. But we had a great meeting there, and we walked around, got all the business owners to come to the event. And a lot of those people are coming to tomorrow's event as well. So we're generating excitement, hopefully, and a lot of interest in our organization. On top of that, we might go to a place like Quincy, which has a very saturated amount of Asian restaurants, and Western Mass, Worcester, Springfield. You know, we plan on hopefully doing events throughout the state so that we're not just central to Boston or the North Shore as where we're starting, but we're definitely going to branch out.
And again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Bobby Wong of the famous Wong family, owners of the Kowloon Restaurant and Cocktail Lounge, a fantastic venue, whether you like comedy nights or I know that a lot of the WWE wrestlers love going to the Kowloon, and on any given day you can find someone who might have been fighting down at the Garden who finds their way up to the Kowloon and hangs out with some of the great staff and folks up in that area. What's your favorite part about your restaurant, if I could just kind of ask you?
The favorite part of favorite part of working at the restaurant, you just get to meet a lot of people. It becomes, it's my social life. So it tells you what kind of life I have. It's my social life. And, you know, meeting people and creating great bonds and friendship over the years with a lot of our customers. When they heard that we may be, you know, doing something else in the couple of years, they were all, you know, supportive of us trying to stay around for a while longer. You know, I would say that's the best part of the business for me. You know, if you're talking about physically what's the best part of the restaurant, definitely, you know, the different dining rooms, the different cocktails, and, you know, people, seeing people have a great time, because it is unique to a lot of other restaurants in terms of decor. And people just get excited coming into the doors. It just makes your day. You know, I guess that's why we're in the business.
Well, and let's not forget, you got family members who've been inducted into the Hospitality Hall of Fame as well, right? By the Massachusetts right. Restaurant Association. So it's not just your fly-by-night restaurant. It's, you know, it's something that is... The folks enjoy going not only for the food, but the ambiance of the restaurant itself.
Right. We've been here, this is our 71st year. I know, it's a long time. I always tell people it's a life sentence when you're in the family business, so they like that idea. But, you know, last year, we, because of the pandemic, we were going to have this huge gala for our 70th. But, you know, naturally that didn't materialize, so we were going to think of doing something maybe next year. As we get, you know, older and older, you know, we like to do something the 75th, but we want to do something maybe even sooner than that to have a big, big bash. And we usually do it for a fundraising reason. The Joey Fund has been one of the recipients of what we do when we do have a big anniversary party, along with the Massachusetts Restaurant Association Education Foundation, which we use for scholarships for students that are looking to go into this as a career.
Well, Bobby, we just got a couple of minutes left here, but I want to make sure that before we say goodbye, at least for this time, is there anything that we haven't mentioned about the launch party tomorrow or about the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association that we want to make sure that we leave with the folks who either are listening or folks who might own a restaurant?
Well, it's going to be a great time to meet and network with a lot of familiar faces, or even with new people that you're going to meet. And, you know, we're going to hopefully get the message out that the Asian Restaurant Association is going to be a great resource for all Asian restaurants to join. It's not only for their business, but it's also great. One of the things I always think about when you join an association, you're a board member, it's the mission is important, but the thing I always find rewarding is that, like, especially since I've been on the board for the Masters Restaurant Association for quite a while, is just the friendship and networking and camaraderie that you have with people that they're basically in the same business, and it's a great feeling to know that you're not alone when you're running your restaurant. You know, everybody else is in the same boat.
Well, I know you had mentioned about networking and marketing, but this association, being a part of it, also helps when it comes to buying power as well, correct?
Right. If we band together, form a with this association, we might be able to go to perhaps you know, some of the big suppliers that, you know, we can maybe cut deals in which we bring a certain amount of volume to their company. Especially now, it's very challenging because everything's so expensive. The expenses on food costs and supplies, it's gone through the roof. So this will be more important than ever.
Finally, if folks either want to find out more information, if they can still get tickets for tomorrow night, or if they want to find out more information about the organization, is there a way to do that?
Yep, you can actually just go call the Kowloon if you want, because we were selling tickets there. We're just about sold out, I'll be honest with you right now. We're at the point where we really can't take I wish we could, but, you know, it's always, a friend of mine always said, don't oversell because you're just going to ruin the experience. And that's where we're at the point right now that we're just about sold out. But going forward, definitely join, you know, and we will have other events similar to this. We will keep you posted, if, you know, and hopefully you go on our website. If you, I don't have it right in front of me.
Bob, let me see if I can help you.
Maybe you have it.
Maybe I can help you. You can go to www.ma-ara.org. Does that sound right?
That sounds great. Okay.
Bobby, I want to thank you.
I appreciate the help.
It's all good. And I want to thank you for joining us this evening to talk about this important event and this important venture for the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association.
I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You got it. Have yourself a great evening, and I hope you have a fantastic event.
Thank you very much. Take care now.
You got it. There he is. Interesting, where we have Bobby Wong from the Kowloon, from the famous Kowloon, the family that owns the Kowloon for 71 years. It's astounding. And what's interesting is I did actually ask for, we had Ming Tsai on the radio program, but I want to say 6-7 years ago, and it was fantastic talking with him because he's still, I was actually watching him this weekend as he's on PBS, is it Simply Ming. And it looks like as though he is now doing cooking at his, he's got his own, it's like a rooftop studio where they do all the cooking and everything. It's pretty cool. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to step aside. Our next guest is here. Yes, Michelle McGrath is here. Shh, don't tell nobody. She's going to be joining us right after the break. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
ATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 959WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
This view was worth a hike.
Right? And it's a good way to stay on top of my health.
Yes, I'm Cologuard, a prescription colon cancer screening option for people 45 plus at average risk. Have you screened for colon cancer?
Not yet.
Don't wait. It's more treatable when caught in early stages.
Tell me more.
Cologuard is non-invasive and it's used at home. It detects altered DNA in your stool to find 92% of colon cancers.
92%?
Yep, even those in early stages.
This was seen in a clinical study with patients 50 and older. Any positive result should be followed by a diagnostic colonoscopy. False positive and negative results may occur. Cologuard is not a replacement for colonoscopy in high-risk patients. Do not use if you have had adenomas, have inflammatory bowel disease and certain hereditary syndromes, or a personal or family history of colon cancer.
Most insured patients pay $0. Ask your provider or an online prescriber if Cologuard is right for you, or visit Cologuard.com.
I'm in.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back here on Monday Night Talk. Sorry, we're like chattering and catching up and... And she came to the realization that one of our guests that we had on a couple of, I would say it might be a month and a half ago, you remember Adam Barisano, right? Well, Adam happens to be a very, very close friend of mine, actually a family member, he's my cousin. And but she's like, I didn't know. So we were kind of playing a little catch up here as to, we know there's so many common people that we know. It's just interesting that it's... The conversation never gets old. But the thought was to have Michelle in here because she has not only a fantastic public relations company, but we should probably start out with saying congratulations. Your book turns one.
Thank you. Your cookbook. Turns one on Wednesday. Yes. Yep. I know. It's extraordinary. I can't believe we've made it through a whole year since I published it.
And just to give folks, tell them how you crafted that thing in short order during a pandemic.
Well, you know, everybody was affected by the pandemic in one way or another. And for me, working in the public relations business of arts and nonprofits, that all became quite quiet for a while. Right. And I found myself with some full-time extra time on my hands. So I decided to engage in a bucket list project and write a cookbook from scratch. And I did it for full-time for 50 days straight and published it last November 10th, and it became a bestseller on November 20th.
Now, is something teased you to hopefully do another? Because once you taste that it's a success, you gotta go, what can I do next?
Well, it's kind of exciting because I did, you know, it was a learning process. It was kind of like going back to college for a little while and learning the process of digital and new age publishing. But I really did enjoy it a lot. But of course, now my business and my role with South Shore Children's Chorus has picked up, which I adore. And so I don't have as much time on my hands now. But I have been actually asked to write cookbooks on behalf of a couple of organizations as a paid contract project. So I may do that. And down the line, I've had several requests to write a cookbook on the holidays or on seasonal cooking. So
you should do a cooking show. Oddly enough, so I got Pluto TV as one of the part of the packages.
Sure, yeah.
And last night, me and the missus were actually, we're going to do Julia Child.
Oh,
and
best.
Actually my missus scoffed because Julia Child at one point mentioned about using frozen peas, and she was aghast that Julia would even mention such a thing.
I love it.
I could see you doing a cooking show. That would be fantastic. But let's dive into this past weekend.
Oh my goodness, what a crazy weekend. It was wonderful.
You had a yummy experience as part of the Great New England Pumpkin Pie Contest.
I know, a first. I had my debut moment as a supposed celebrity judge at the pie contest, and it was all of New England. People came from all over, and there were more than 30 pies that were baked by professionals, home cooks, and youth bakers as well. So there was three categories. Okay. And there was a varied, bevy of prizes, but each one of the winners in each category, which was 9 winners, all received the Creative Table Cookbook as part of their prize winnings, as a kind of an anniversary celebration. So,
and again, if folks are going, well, where did this take place? It was the Plymouth Patuxent Museum.
Yes, and it's their first ever, and they do plan to do it again. And I may well also capitalize on that with my buddies over at the Cranberry Growers Association, because Brian Wick was also one of the guest judges at this event, and we're talking about possibly expanding this into the cranberry realm and doing a cranberry competition next year, which would be really fun.
Really? Like jelly and sauce? Or
all the stuff, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, I'm going to have fun with it. I'm going to have some fun with
this. Do you like going to events like this and networking? And are you able to cross-pollinate with other people?
I saw some really cool people, like other book authors and restaurant owners. One of my favorite people to meet was Jed. He was a judge, but he is also the director of the Collective of Agrimark and Cabot Cheese out of Vermont. Ooh. He was an extraordinarily interesting guy, and I had a really great time talking with him, and he gave me the most beautiful block of wax-covered special reserve, his own special reserve cheddar. So I had to give him a cookbook. So I had a great time.
How many cookbooks did you bring with you?
Well,
at least a couple boxes.
It's my job to do that. So
definitely very, very nice. Because we have a bevy of things to touch upon that are coming up. Most memorable pie.
Oh my goodness!
Do you have one at this?
Well, there was quite a few. There was one that had brandied whipped cream and had a lot of spice. There was two pies that had orange zest, and that was kind of a nice compliment to pumpkin. And one of my favorite pies, because I do love cranberries, even besides working for the industry, had a cranberry sauce, like a whole cranberry sauce layer on top, and then they had positioned a sculpted Plymouth Rock on it out of like some kind of pastry, and it said 1620 right on it. It was pretty cool.
That's clever.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thumbs up for our artistic value, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Anybody try to sneak squash into their pies?
There were a few people that used squash. I actually could taste the difference between squash and pumpkin, and I really prefer the pumpkin.
Yeah, you definitely can tell the difference. Something that I want to give you kudos on is I believe that you are going to be having something to do with the opening ceremonies for America's Hometown Thanksgiving Parade.
I am. Thank you so much. I was so pleasantly surprised. I've had the pleasure several years of working with the parade's director, Ollie DiMacedo. Anybody that knows the parade knows Ollie puts his heart and soul into that, along with hundreds of volunteers. And it's been a great privilege to work, affiliate with that, with the Cranberry Growers float that goes every year, as well as sometimes providing the connections to entertainment for the opening ceremonies. And this year, Ollie was kind enough to step it up a notch for me and named me the National Media and Entertainment Managing Coordinator for the opening ceremonies. And I'm very excited because I was able to book a Broadway singer to come and sing the national anthem. And it's going to be a surprise. I'm not telling you who, but it's going to be pretty amazing. So keep your eye out.
So what does the title entail you to do? Is it just something like that? Do you have to kind of make sure that there's a lot of pomp and circumstance to whatever that ceremony is?
It's a lot of coordination and being a liaison to help the people that are working on sound, because this is the first time the parade will ever have been broadcast nationally live. And so that's where Ollie brought me into the picture, to help with the connections from WCVB, who I already work with frequently because of my PR work, and the sound people, and then the national broadcast people. It just adds a whole nother layer to what they're already doing there. So.
Wow. How did it feel to learn that you...
I was so surprised. He just called me out of the blue, and he often does that anyway, so I'm used to that from him. And we've had a very wonderful friendship. He was my daughter's basketball coach in high school, and ever since then we've just connected on a business level, and it's been fantastic. He's a wonderful person.
Yeah, and if you are tuning in, we are speaking with Michelle McGrath, a best-selling book author and also all-around great gal and PR specialist. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go next? Do you want to talk about Remembering Christmas Past or Messiah?
Yeah, well, we can definitely talk about all things entertainment coming up. There's a privilege of working in the arts PR realm of having lots and lots of entertainment to talk about. So I'm also a singer myself, and which is why I have the privilege of also working with South Shore Children's Chorus, who you've had Kirsten Oberoi on here, as we're serving 100 students now on the South Shore and beyond, as of late in Hanover at our new campus. And I sang myself in two adult ensembles at Pilgrim Festival Chorus, where I also serve as their public relations person. So we are performing Remembering Christmas Past, which is a collection, thankfully, of my favorite, just so happens to be my favorite music over the last decade of the chorus's performances at Christmas time. And that occurs on December 4th and 5th at St. Bonaventure Parish in Plymouth, where it holds about between 350 and 500 people at that parish. We usually have a really full, wonderful performance, and it's just so fulfilling to sing to that kind of crowd because they really love choral music, and Christmas is about choral music. That's like, if you're a choral musician, you wait all year to get to Christmas. So indeed, it's pretty exciting. And then we do an extra special event that swings us over to Middleboro, where we do a Messiah and Carol sing-along. So that is the 10th anniversary year for that as well. And it's a very special thing because usually in more mecca areas like Metro Boston or Boston itself, you'll see or hear about a lot of Handel's Messiah being done as a sing-along. But it's very rare to have it on the South Shore or in this region. So the Pilgrim Festival Chorus took that responsibility, and we've had that for quite some time in Middleboro. And it's kind of like the wrap-up of our season. You know, we perform four different concerts this month, and that's the last, in December. And that's the last one that we will perform in December.
And just a little secret, I believe that you are going to be, after you're done here talking on air with me.
Yes.
You'll be heading off to rehearsal.
I know, I do have my music in my car, and I am ready to roll.
What is it like to get, we're coming out of the tail end of a pandemic.
Yes.
What has it been like getting to this point because we didn't have this necessarily last year.
Yeah. So we were nearly 18 months absent from singing in my a cappella group as well as Pilgrim Festival Chorus and many other vocal organizations in this region. And so pretty much from what I see of the organizations that I serve, everybody is incorporating the use of singers' masks or masking, social distancing, air circulation, and things like that in rehearsals and performances to keep everybody safe so we can keep singing. And it makes a huge difference. It's a really wonderful experience to go back to singing again. It's been a long time for all of us. And I haven't met a single choral singer yet that isn't really super grateful to be back there and sharing their voice and enjoying song.
Is there a particular arrangement that you're looking forward to performing?
Oh, I have to just tell you, every single piece in this concert is really heartfelt, and I'm very excited about it. I love Christmas music anyway, but some of these pieces I hadn't heard until I became a choral singer, but they are definitely epic pieces of music. Like, if you go to this concert, you're going to not regret going. It's really special.
Interesting. Sounds like you've already also set up your Christmas tree as well.
I'm almost there, I'll tell you. I do it early only because I am a choral singer, so the first few weekends of December, not only do we have concerts, but I always host a caroling party for my singing friends, and we sing our way around Scituate. So, I can't decorate when everybody else is decorating because I'm already performing. So,
definitely very interesting.
It happens early.
I ask you that because my stepdaughter and my daughter-in-law put the trees up over the weekend. I'm like, what are you doing? But, say the people who start celebrating this particular holiday sooner are the happiest people.
So. Yeah. Look at what we just went through this weekend, right? Daylight savings took a tank for everybody. And so a few of my neighbors are put up Christmas trees already. They just need the light, and I don't blame them one bit.
Amen. Let's talk about another event taking place December 18th and 19th, Nutcracker.
The Nutcracker. I can't even tell you what beautiful imagery and photography and dancing the South Shore Ballet Theater performs and offers. They have an amazing collection of people performing in this event from all over the South Shore, from more than 24 communities in the South Shore. And some of them are students of theirs at the Ballet Theater, mm-hmm. and then some of them are also guest artists, so they're adults. And they put on literally a professional quality production. And much like everybody else last year, they weren't able to perform. So what they did last year to ensure that they could still include the Nutcracker in everybody's holiday traditions was they filmed an outdoor performance of the Nutcracker around the South Shore and turned it into a movie. So people were able to watch it digitally from home, and it was beautiful also. But I gotta tell you, the students and the director, Martha Van McKeon, they're all super excited to bring this back to the stage. And that if you have been at the Center for the Arts, their academy where they perform, it's a gorgeous venue, and it's really accessible and not a bad seat in the house, so everybody will enjoy it there.
Worth noting, if you're tuning in, and we're speaking with Michelle McGrath, and she's great at sharing this information. When I'm like, can you come in and talk? She goes, absolutely. the Nutcracker, Saturday, December 18th, 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Sunday, the 19th, December 19th at 2 p.m. This is at the Thayer Academy Center for the Arts, 745 Washington Street in Braintree. Now, if you're interested in finding out more information, you can visit SouthShoreBalletTheater.com or you can call 781-312-7224. And as she had mentioned, that there are performers who are part of this. 92 dances, the information you shared with me.
Yes.
92 dances from 24 South Shore communities. That's amazing.
I know. It is. When I saw those numbers, I thought it was a typo. I had to go back and check it. But can you imagine 92 dancers on one stage for one performance? It's really a beautiful production.
One that I don't know if we had this on our playlist or not, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yes. Americana Theater Company. I'm so thrilled. So they use this as a biennial production, and they always perform performing at the Plymouth Center for the Arts, and it's so wonderful because it's an intimate space, so you feel like you're part of the set. You're right there with the actors. And they love this piece so much that they perform it every other year, but because, again, the last pandemic year that we suffered, things had to be bounced to this year. And it is definitely one of the productions I also make sure I see every single time they perform it, because it is, you leave there just feeling so full of holiday spirit and like as if you were transported to somewhere else. And it's a really wonderful form of entertainment. And it's a great company. It's small. They're very, very dedicated people. And they put on a wonderful show. So a great recommendation, too, to go over to Americana.
And it says here, a live radio play.
That's correct. Right. So when you go to the show, as you are here, you're actually sitting inside a radio studio. And so there's a narrator, and you hear all the sound effects they did in the old radio shows.
Sure.
It's really cool. And it's all decked out for Christmas, too. You can't beat that.
And so just so folks know, selected dates from December 4th to the 12th, they do have evening and matinee performances available. Again, as Michelle said, the Plymouth Center for the Arts. It's 11 North Street in Plymouth. And you can give the, you can either check their website out, Americana Theater, and theater is T-R-E.
That's dot correct.
Org,
right.
Boys and girls. A lot of folks will do the E-R and go, I can't get it. What's going on? I spelled it wrong. Or you can call them 508-591-0282. And I want to circle back around to the two events that we were talking about earlier, Remembering Christmas Past and the Messiah and Carol Sing-Along in Middleborough. Is there a way for folks to find out more information regarding those two events that are taking place?
Yes, absolutely. So Remembering Christmas Past has those two performances in Plymouth at St. Bonaventure Parish. That's South Plymouth, like in Manomet. And you can go to pilgrimfestivalchorus.org to order tickets for that online in advance. And for the Messiah Sing that occurs in Middleborough, it's a lot more casual. People come decked out in their holiday attire. They're singing from their seats. It's not like a performance per se like you would go to a concert. There's soloists and sometimes instrumentalists come sit in, and the audience becomes the chorus. So they get to come. They get to borrow a score if they don't have a Messiah score. And you can just pay at the door admission, open admission, and come in and enjoy singing the piece. There's a beautiful Hamel organ there that our longtime accompanist and co-director, Elizabeth Chapman Riley, plays. And it's a really great time. Highly recommend it.
So again, the Messiah and Carol Sing-Along, that's Friday, December 17th at 7:30 p.m.
Sure.
Church at the Green, 6 Plimpton Street in Middleborough. As she had mentioned, Remembering Christmas Past, Saturday, December 4th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, December 5th at 4 p.m. at the St. Bonaventure Parish, 803 State Road in Plymouth. What are the acoustics like in the St. Bonaventure Parish?
Oh, actually, it's really fantastic for a choral setting.
Very warm.
It just has a lot of great ring to it. And when you fill the seats with people, it absorbs the echo because it's that cathedral style shaped building. It's got the pointed ceiling.
Yeah.
It's really fulfilling to sing there. It's great.
And tell us, you had mentioned co-artistic director Elizabeth Chapman Riley.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about Bill Richter.
Yes.
Conducted by co-artistic director.
That's correct.
What's it like to be guided by Bill?
Well, Bill has been an educator, first of all, for almost 40 years, and he has pretty much, I think, directed every choral organization in the region, as well as many of the Mass Music Educators district organizations and Allstate and things like that. So he's a very accomplished and a very musical family, comes from a musical family. So it's almost as if he knows this, like, from the back of his hand. But he, even to this day, he'll tell you, he still studies his score. He still practices because being a musician is a forever learning job.
Sure.
And so when he gets up there, he's almost, you know, he's the entertainer for us because he's keeping us captivated and on tempo with the music.
Sure.
And at the same time, turning and entertaining the audience. So much like Stephen with Plymouth Philharmonic Orchestra, who we're also going to see this month. Yes, I'm so excited. He's going to be opening, with the Plymouth Philharmonic, the Friday, November 19th concert at America's Hometown Thanksgiving Celebration. I've already got 4 tickets for that. I cannot wait. He's one of my dearest friends, and it is going to be spectacular performance and a great opening for that weekend.
How important is it to have such a vibrant leader like Stephen?
Oh my goodness. He's not just in the orchestra. He's in many other organizations. Sure. Regionally, nationally, sometimes internationally, and also a role model for education and community partnerships to ensure that our students in this area really truly get a music education and that they are inspired by what the Phil does and what the orchestra represents. And many of the students in our region get to sing with the orchestra, which is the very best way to give an impression to a child to make sure that they want to learn more about music.
That's fantastic.
It's great stuff.
Again, we've been speaking with Michelle McGrath. Is there anything that we haven't talked about, but you want to take a moment to share? Because I wanted to make sure I saved a little bit of bonus coverage.
Well, I love it.
Before
That's
you
great.
Leave.
You know, us PR people, we love our extra time.
That's awesome.
Well, there are many other weekend activities during the America's Hometown Thanksgiving Celebration. And for people that aren't familiar with that, sometimes I get that question. They're like, I've never heard of it. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is like going to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in Plymouth. And especially this year, it's so special because we are actually celebrating 2020 this year, a year late. So we're doing the 400th quadricentennial anniversary. And there are many, many events that weekend. And the organization, which you can reach at usathanksgiving.org online, you can learn more about the Plymouth Philharmonic concert. You could learn more about where I'll be at opening ceremonies with the national broadcast. It'll be on for 2 hours on Saturday morning. And that doesn't stop there. Once the parade ends, there are so many other things happening. There's a special appearance by the Golden Knights Army parachute team. They're going to be flying in. There's going to be the parade followed by waterfront activities, the Children's Pavilion, a craft beer and wine festival, food truck alley, and historic reenactment village all on Saturday, November 20th,
wow,
right at the waterfront in Plymouth. That evening at Memorial Hall at 6:30 p.m., the National Alumni Drum and Bugle Corps concert draws, I think, 13 drum and bugle corps, many of which will perform in the parade, and they're going to perform a alumni concert that evening. And then on Sunday, the beloved Harvest Market down on the waterfront, where you can get the very best farmers market of the whole season.
Wow.
That's quite a weekend.
That is quite a weekend. Now, is this only going to be televised nationally? Because previously, friends down at PAC TV, cable,
right,
would do it. Julie Thompson and Donna Rodriguez.
That's right. Donna Rodriguez, right.
Are they still going to be part of this?
I'm sure they are still part of it. Yeah, and all of the media, I was actually just with Scott Smith the other day from Wicked Local in Gannett, and he was actually the MC at the pie competition, and he's going to be running all over the parade himself. But what's probably going to happen, because it was the quadricentennial celebration, most people will be able to reach it nationally through the WCVB broadcast first. So,
now, if folks are just tuning in and they only got the back half of what we talked about, how can they find out more information and get an idea of all these fantastic events that are going to be taking place this holiday season?
Right. So there's 2 ways to do that. If you're interested in all of the things that you want to hear about the America's Hometown Thanksgiving Celebration, you can go to their website and see their digital magazine or their brand new app for your phone, so you can actually follow along on the parade on the day of the parade, and that's at usthanksgiving.com. And if you want to learn more about all of the arts in this area in the holiday season and beyond, because that might be my cup of tea, you can visit my website at mcgrathpr.com, where you'll also be able to order custom edition of my cookbook, The Creative Table, starting again on Wednesday.
Thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you.
To share all these great events, folks who are looking for things to do during this holiday season. Hopefully you have filled their wish list for things to do for the next several weekends and then some. So we'll look forward to having you back in.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be here, Kevin.
And we're going to step aside. Final segment on deck. We'll speak with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan in just a few moments. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on, guess what? 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggins Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
You like my new car?
Well, I like that new car smell. What is that infernal binging?
Oh, it's part of the driver assist. Standard equipment nowadays.
Assist?
Yeah, watch.
Hey, cut that. You're way too close.
Yeah, it's telling me that. See the text?
Watch out.
What was that?
You were driving too close. That truck snapped back a rock.
And now I have a cracked windshield?
You know, your mother was a way better driver assist.
Please, kindly check your windshield.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Glass. We replace your windshield and insurance pays. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call. And thank you.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We have finally arrived at the last segment of the evening. I hate saying the word finally, but it's kind of that word that you use to kind of tell you that things are, it's almost like saying in conclusion. It's kind of the same thing. But I think we saved the best for last. At least I think my unofficial official co-host would tell you, and you're saying, well, who the hell is that? That is none other than Brockton Mayor, the 50th, the reelected mayor of the City of Champions, Brockton, Massachusetts, Robert Sullivan. Mayor, welcome back, Kevin, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. I always love being on your show, and with great pride, I am the official unofficial co-host. So thank you for having me on the show again tonight. This is awesome.
I might have to get you like a Monday Night Talk proclamation that says that.
I want a coffee mug that says that. That's all I want.
Do you really? What that says? Yes. That you're the official co-host of Monday Night Talk?
The unofficial official. Yes, yes.
Unofficial. Yes. Let me write that down.
Yeah.
I'll make that happen.
Oh, I know you will. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been very busy. Life is full of chaos, but you can't wait for things to slow down and have a good time. You gotta ride the wave.
That's a Ferris Bueller quote right there. I picked that one up pretty good, Mr. Tachi.
That was good.
Yeah.
I got to jump right in with both feet and say, how are you feeling? Here we are. We're nearly a week since the city elections, and you were reelected resoundingly by the city of Brockton, the residents. How does it feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's an honor and privilege to serve as mayor of the city that, where I grew up and where my wife Maria grew up and where we're raising our kids. And I want to thank the everybody that went out to vote on Tuesday. Again, I was honored to get the trust of 8,095 residents voting for me. 72% of the votes came my way. And I'm not going to let them down. I'm going to continue to work with them and work for them. And You know, I said this, my first term in office has been the COVID term, and it really has. It's been COVID, COVID, COVID. But we've done some really wonderful endeavors to make it a healthy, safe city of champions, city of Brockton. We're going to continue that. And, you know, the best is yet to come. I have a wonderful team in my office here and working with some newly elected folks and some reelected folks, both on the city council, school committee side, and, you know, the state delegation. I'll continue to work diligently with them. And, you know, got a wonderful call from Senator Ed Markey and Congressman Steve Lynch, and just, you know, some really wonderful things are going to happen in Brockton. And to be reelected is just an awesome feeling. I had a wonderful campaign of support. So many people, Kevin, out there working. And it was different because of COVID. You know, we couldn't necessarily do the door knocking, the old fashioned politics that I love so much. We had to scale that back. But social media was key, and mailings were key, and phone calls were key. And again, I'm thankful. I also applaud everybody that put their name on the ballot to run for a better Brockton. So I'll continue to roll up my sleeves, get the job done, and we'll continue to work together. We're better together here in the City of Champions.
It's interesting to note that you have a distinct advantage over most candidates, because you have a lot of folks named Sullivan in your campaign office. What's it like to have a mom and dad being head of your, you know, a key part of your reelection or your campaigns, not only this one, but previous campaigns?
Yeah, my mom and dad have been there since day one, and I love them, and I'm thankful that they have the ability and the health to get out there and still help me. My mom was at the campaign office every single day. My dad was there. If not in the office, he was out on the streets. You know, he's a retired Brockton High teacher. My mom's a retired nurse in Brockton. And, you know, I'm just thankful. It's a privilege to have both my in-laws and my parents still in Brockton that are able to see our three kids every single day. And again, they're the best campaign manager, in my humble opinion, of any local, state or federal campaign. And, you know, it's awesome to be able to work with them. You know, they love Brockton. My dad was born on Dover Street, and, you know, my mom's family, when they came over from Ireland, were in Brockton working in the factories. So, you know, Brockton is in all of us, and it's a special place. And thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, the Enterprise, the local newspaper, did a nice photo of my mom and I on election night, and it's a keeper. I'm going to get it framed. And, you know, they were with me in 2005 when we knocked on doors. It was just literally my wife and my parents. When we ran for Councilor at Large, we were successful. And for 14 years, I served as a Councilor at Large, and the last 2 years as the mayor. And Brockton's a wonderful city. It's a wonderful city. It's a diverse city. It's rich in history, but it's also a changing city, and it's changing for the better. And so to be able to continue to keep that train moving down the proverbial track is just an awesome endeavor.
You mentioned Dover Street, and that to me gave me an instant segue to talking about, we're kind of talking about events that have taken place over the past couple of weeks. Was how was the event that you had the 70th, the showing of the Rocky Marciano Joe Louis 70th anniversary of that fight? How did that go?
Awesome. Awesome. I mean, awesome. We had, you know, it was a rainy night. It was actually the night before the crazy weather with the power outage, but we had Rocky and Steven Marciano show up. I've known both of those guys since we were kids. We played basketball and football together, and Steve and I went to college together. And, you know, they're the nephews of the former heavyweight champion, undisputed best heavyweight champion, in my humble opinion. Their dad, Peter Sr., couldn't make it. But, you know, we had 50 people, and it was awesome to be able to sit at West Middle School. And, you know, we did it in a safe manner, you know, the COVID standards. We had pizza, and we were able to acquire four Louis versus Marciano fights from fighting photos. Stanley Bowman, the late Stanley Bowman, the archives are up at Stonehill, and you can buy them. And we bought them, and we blew them up. So when you walked in, you saw these massive photos. And we watched the fight, and it was a great fight. And you know, Steven was able to get on stage and share some stories about his uncle and his dad. And I gave a citation to both Rocky and Steven, and one for his mom and dad, their mom and dad to give, but just a great night. And then next September, now that I'm reelected and I'll continue to be the mayor for 2 years, next September will be the 70th anniversary of when Rocky won the title, when he knocked out Jersey Joe Walcott. So we're going to do it again. Hopefully the weather will be with us. It won't be as rainy. But thank you for asking. I mean, my dad grew up on Dover Street with Peter Sr. And, you know, he told me stories growing up as a kid. He remembers Rocky running around the streets with Ali Colombo, his longtime trainer and friend. And my mom and dad met at the Center Theater downtown. Rocky, when he was the champ, would do a Saturday matinee. He'd come in and watch the movies. And my grandmother was the manager of Fannie Farmer's Candy. And Rocky would always come in during the holiday season. So, you know, the fact that, you know, Rocky is a part of Brockton, much like Marvelous Marvin Hagler, those two gentlemen really put us on the map of why, you know, we're called the City of Champions. So it was a great night, and we'll do it again.
Digressing back to the elections, and that is talk to me about you're going into, you know, your new term with new city councilors, four. That's an enlarge, and then you have a familiar face who I think you probably sat with during the school committee meetings just recently. Now he's going to switch over and he's been elected as Ward 1. That's Tom Minicello. Talk to me about having new ideas and new faces on those two boards.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a wonderful thing because there's a great mix of skilled people. So Tom Minicello and Mark D'Agostino currently both sit with me on the school committee as mayor. I chair the school committee. So Tom and Mark serve in Ward 1 and Ward 3 on school committee. They were both successful last Tuesday. So they'll become the new counselors in Ward 1 and Ward 3. Ward 2 was Maria Tavares was the one that prevailed. She'll be the new counselor. And then David Teixeira will be the counselor at large. And then, you know, we have two new school committee members. And I'm excited. I'm really excited to continue to work in a collaborative manner. And, you know, to be able to have really skilled people getting elected that have a common purpose for a better community. That's what it's about. I mean, when you serve, you don't do it for the money. You don't do it for anything, but for the right reasons. And, you know, I'm a great example, Kevin. I mean, I have three kids and I try to balance it, but at times you miss things, family life that you'll never get back. But, you know, I have a great support staff at home and, you know, I'm excited on what the next chapter is going to be for Brockton. Construction is at the all-time high right now. We have to continue that. We will continue that. Hollywood is filming. They just filmed here. And we could talk about that, Kevin, at City Hall. It's a biopic on Whitney Houston. It's great because, you know, Brockton gets paid for the use of the space. In this case, it was City Hall. But really what's beneficial is that they're shopping local. They're getting gas local. They're going and getting subs and coffee local. That helps the mom and pops during COVID that were really hampered. So I'm excited, Kevin, that everybody that ran for office, those that prevailed, and those that didn't prevail, you know, I've lost elections and I know it's not a good feeling, but it's a learning lesson. And, you know, I hope other people will take the mantle and run for office, you know, locally and state and federal.
And if you're just tuning in, you are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD coming to you from Broadcast House. And our guest is none other than the unofficial co-host of Monday Night Talk and mayor of Brockton. Robert Sullivan is joining us, and we're playing a little catch up and talking about still a full list of things to run down and touch base with the mayor about. You kind of tease the fact about Hollywood. It's interesting because the new season of Wayne, which is supposed to be set in the city of Brockton, but it's filmed elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Simmons is the creator. He and his brother Wayne Simmons was a year older than me at Brockton, Brockton High. I worked at the pool one summer with Sean, and he's the creator. He's the producer. It's really well received. You know, they grew up in Ward 1 on Torrey Street. So, you know, we have a lot of talent that has actually gone out west to Hollywood. Pooch Hall is an actor. He was on Ray Donovan. He went to Brockton High. Kristen Alfonso, a soap opera for decades, star again from Brockton High graduate. But, you know, I did an op-ed not too long ago that was written in the Boston Herald, Kevin, that the film tax credit needs to continue because it's beneficial for municipalities in the Commonwealth. And thanks to the House and Senate, you know, the legislature did continue that. So, you know, we have AMC filming a TV show that got picked up for season two. So they're still here in Brockton. Netflix, of course, it was, you know, it was a Meryl Streep, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence film that, you know, Don't Look Up was filmed a portion here. And The Boston Strangler is going to be another movie filmed here as well in Brockton. So I welcome it. I love working with the producers, and you know, it's really showcasing Brockton. And I've said this many times to you, Kevin, we're in the people business. It's just a government business, but it's a $500 million, half a billion dollar corporation known as the City of Brockton. And anything that I can do as the biggest cheerleader to market it and get some revenue coming in, I'm not going to hesitate to do it. And Hollywood is one of those endeavors.
Well, speaking of, it's interesting you mentioned all those who've gone west. Fortunately, you still have some of that talent still living in and around it. And I'm speaking, of course, none other than the Emmy Award-winning Newritson Rateau, who has done, he's actually working on another film and trying to earn himself yet another piece of hardware, and hopefully he is successful. But then you got a guy like John Marion, who has done a lot to make the city of Brockton very special, not just during this time of year, but all throughout the year. But knowing that he's a fan of the department store Santa, and that he's the guy who likes to dance around during the holiday parade. I know that last year it could not be held, but my understanding is we may have a smaller version of it this year.
Yeah, we are. It's a community holiday celebration. It's going to be the Saturday right after Thanksgiving. And, you know, it was really a pleasure for me to be able to announce that. I mean, it's an annual event that we had a pause last year because of COVID. And, you know, we have dedicated Brocktonians, Mary Waldron. She's the interim president of the Downtown Business Association, and Superintendent Mike Thomas from BPS, and scaled back. But, you know, we're going to adhere to the COVID protocols. It's going to be an outdoor food court, holiday parade, family-friendly activities. And also the same day, we're going to be celebrating the bicentennial of North Bridgewater. So 200 years ago, the town was established, North Bridgewater, Massachusetts, which became the city of Brockton. So we have a lot going on. We're going to have music and you know, holiday themes. And I'm excited about it. And you're right. James Edgar, first department store Santa Claus, was from the city of Brockton. And, you know, we take that as another aspect of the history. You know, we can talk about Thomas Edison being in Brockton for several years, the first electrified fire station, electrified movie theater, electrified streetlight in Brockton. You know, Frederick Douglass was here. We still have the oldest run family-owned candy manufacturing in the whole United States. Washburn, again, outbeats Hershey. And again, W.B. Mason's here as well. They've been here since the late 1890s. So there's a lot of history in Brockton. And, you know, that holiday celebration is long overdue. I'm excited that we're going to be able to do it. We'll be safe. We're also going to have our friends from DPH, Kevin, to be able to give out shots. Again, vaccines are allowed now, Pfizer vaccines for 5 to 11-year-olds. So we have the booster clinic going on at the Shaw Center as well with Brewster Ambulance and DPH. We're hosting it, and I welcome that. It's regional, so not just Brockton residents. Anybody in the region can come. Right. But yeah, it's a holiday celebration, and it's coming up. And, you know, I was able to take a night off of my mayoral duties and have my dad duties, and we went trick-or-treating, my wife and I. It was fun to see my kids. You know, we had Indiana Jones, we had a Cruella, and we had Captain America. So, you know, this is a great time for family, but I also have to reflect that we have lost 448 residents in Brockton, Kevin, to the deadly virus known as COVID-19. So it's a solemn time as well. But yeah, I'm glad we're able to do it this year, and it's going to be rocking. So if you are around Brockton and you live in Brockton, or you don't, and you want to visit us, it's downtown Main Street, and it's the Saturday, 2 days after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's just right around the corner. And let's not forget, I don't want to dwarf another upcoming event this week.
Yes.
And that is Veterans Day. And I know that there's usually a regular celebration, or there's usually a regular commemorance to remember those who have served.
Yeah, and I'm proud to say we're doing it again. I mean, I've said as long as I've been a public servant, you know, the two people we're thankful for are the seniors and the veterans. And we'll never forget that. We wouldn't be able to, you and I, to converse like this, or I wouldn't have been able to have an election, you know, last week without the sacrifices of the veterans. And America is great because of the men and women that have served. And Veterans Day Parade, yeah, it's this Thursday, right? It's the 11th. And we're asking folks to join the city of Brockton. We're going to honor our American heroes, our veterans, active duty, and those that have either been retired or passed. So we will have a Veterans Day parade. It always kicks off at the War Memorial Building, which is on West Elm Street in Brockton, 156 West Elm Street. It starts at 9:30, Kevin, and Veterans Services Agent Dave Farrell will be, again, running point. But, you know, it's something that Brockton has done for generations. And, you know, I'm really excited, and I'm going to be marching and thanking the vets. We need to thank the vets at all times.
You know, as a reporter, I remember the many times I've covered that parade, and unfortunately, he's not with us any longer. And of course, I'm speaking of the one and only Silver Fox, former city councilor, man who loved his city. I believe that he served during World War II.
He did.
That is Mr. George Cataldo. He would always tell me how, you know, he always was asking for folks to come on out, and then it was important to remember those who gave service. And he would say this whether it was Veterans Day or Memorial Day, but felt as though, like, you know, he was in good spirits when he saw people on the side of the street or when he would do the Pledge of Allegiance. So, you know, I think of a guy like that, and if somebody is tuned in, hopefully folks will get out, socially distance, but remember the veterans with some of these festivities taking place in Brockton on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, George was a special guy, greatest generation, and he's missed. And in the mayor's office, you know, there's a painting, and George used to volunteer for many, many mayors, Mayor Units, Harrington, Belzotti, Carpenter, before he relocated to Florida. And he actually etched a little picture of himself in a painting. So he's here every single day. George Cataldo was here, and he'll be here as long as the building at City Hall is still here at 45 School Street in Brockton.
Probably one of my other favorite memories was when I used to work at WBET. Yep. And on Fridays, there was actually a time on Fridays, there would be like a long line of people. I'm like, who are these people? Are we giving away? Is there some kind of special giveaway? And he would actually invite people to come in studio and sing with him on WBET back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was just a special guy. His dress attire was something that we'd all be jealous of. I mean, yep. He was dressed to the nines at all times, and just a true gentleman and a gentleman. And, you know, again, we've lost a lot from the greatest generations, no doubt about that. We also still have some heroes. Lou Tarantino, he was prisoner of war of the Nazis, and he's still with us, thank God. And, you know, he's in his late 90s. So, again, there's so many people out in the community, and we have to learn from our history to forge ahead. One thing we just did, Kevin, and I want to thank Dave Farrell again, is we just honored Purple Heart recipients. We have been named, finally, it's a mantra that I asked when I became mayor, a Purple Heart community. We're a Purple Heart city now. You're going to be seeing the unveiling this Thursday of a sign, and then we're going to have them out throughout the city of Brockton. So, again, we have had two Congressional Medal Honor winners from Brockton, Lieutenant Fox and Corporal Craig. So, again, everybody that has served or are serving, I say thank you. I haven't served a day in the armed services, but I'm so thankful of the men and women, the brave men and women that do.
You had during the last response that you gave, you had mentioned about vaccines and for students. What kind of a push? I shouldn't say a push, but what kind of a message is your office going to get out there to let folks know of all languages, all creeds, that they should come and get this shot for their children?
Yeah, I mean, we'll continue to do what we're doing. It's been working. I mean, we're some of the best vaccine numbers of any gateway communities are in the city of Brockton. So, you know, we're a very diverse community, beautiful, rich community. We're not rich in terms of money. We're rich in people. So, you know, we'll do it in Cape Verdean Creole, Haitian Creole, Spanish, and English. And also a big reach out to Brockton Public Schools, New Heights Charter School, Cardinal Spellman, Trinity Catholic, Southeastern Regional. It's in our neighboring community of Southeastern, but 65% of the kids that go there are from Brockton. So, you know, listen, I'm pleased because I have two children that meet that age criteria now. So, you know, we're going to continue to partner with DPH. Our Board of Health is out there working it. And also, you know, statistically, there's some people that have gotten the first shot and then they never came back for a second shot. So we want to reach out to those folks. And you know, we have the ability to provide shots in the arms of young and old, and we want to continue to do that. We need a healthy, safe community. Worst part of my job is when I get the death count and sick count at 4 o'clock every day, Kevin. And, You know, I yearn for the day where they call me and say, you know, Bob, nobody's sick today and no one's died. So we're not there yet, but we're moving in that right direction.
And again, if you are tuned in, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, as we have a couple more minutes left with him. And I want to take that time, the last 4 or 5 minutes that we have with you, Mayor, to talk a little bit about this article that was published in Business in Focus, talking about the city. Everything in Brockton is better, and there's a great picture of you, and there's a group of folks. You're heading up School Street. Talk to me about the information in this particular article and how you feel it showcases the community, your administration, and all that's being done to make Brockton a destination place for folks to not only to visit, but also consider living in.
Yeah, I mean, that's a photo of me and Mike Keneally. He's Commonwealth Secretary of Housing and Economic Development. And Mike is Secretary Keneally's visited quite often. Lieutenant Governor Polito has been here many, many, many times as well, as has Congressman Steve Lynch and Governor Baker himself. So, listen, we are a wonderful city. We're the only city in Plymouth County. Three commuter stops here, right? We have Montello, Campello, and downtown. So you can jump on the train and get into South Station in 35 minutes. The price point in Brockton right now, that's why we have 750 housing units in the queue. The price point compared to, and nothing against these municipalities, I love all their leaders in the towns, but, you know, City of Quincy and Braintree and Charlestown and Southie and Dorchester, we have young professionals moving here because they're saving money on rent that they can then utilize to pay off student debt or save money for their first home purchase. And my goal right now is to get people to come here. And then, you know, when they come here, the additional amenities will come here as well. The first Black-owned brewery in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, it's going to be located downtown, Brockton Beer Company, should be opening up real soon, if not this month, next month. It's going to be a game changer. And, you know, this is a story of Brockton. You know, a lot of times when Brockton's on the news, Kevin, it's not the best news. So I want to be you know, a mayor that markets the heck out of a wonderful community. And, you know, the number one asset in Brockton are the people. I will tell you that the return on investment for developers is real. There's no doubt about that. And I'll give you a quick example. I was in Boston at 125 High Street Financial District. We're, in essence, refinancing our unfunded pension liability, our debt liability. It's going to save us $100 million. So we had $300 million worth of municipal bonds to sell. So we're selling investments in Brockton. $300 million, a sizable amount of money. Guess what? $1.3 billion with a B was requested to invest in Brockton. So Brockton's on the radar of developers and investors. Standards and Moody's still ranks us AA. We're a great community. And the number one thing are the people. You know, Brockton High is one of the largest public high schools east of the Mississippi. I'm a product of Brockton High. It trained me really well to go on to Boston College and go to law school and go to business school at BC as well. And you know what? The best thing about Brockton is once you are a Brocktonian, you're always a Brocktonian. You know, you're one of your regular guests, Dave Wedge, you know, New York Times bestselling author, Dave Wedge, who no longer lives in Brockton, comes here all the time. He was at the Rocky Joe Lewis thing, you know. And I can say that about so many people that have graduated from Brockton High or Cardinal Spelman or Southeastern Regional. It's a special place. So it's a story of Business in Focus. I would encourage everybody to look it up. The title, again, is Everything's Better in Brockton, City of Brockton, Mass. And it's Pauline Mueller is the author. But again, we have to control our own destiny. Right now, we need a healthy, safe community. One thing I didn't do, Kevin, is I did not pause construction during COVID. Other mayors did. And if you drive downtown right now, you'll never see as many cranes now as you do in Brockton. So I'm excited to what the next chapter is. I'm really excited and honored and privileged to be reelected because now I can continue to get through the COVID term and really do some wonderful things that's going to benefit everybody that lives or works in the city of Brockton.
And what does that mean? I mean, for the longest time, there were a lot of, when we're talking gateway cities and cities that had rebound and rebuilt, Lowell was like one of those communities that was always referenced. And more, I'm hearing Brockton being referenced. How does that make you feel as one of the premier leaders in the community when that's said about the city that you represent?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just extremely proud. I'm really proud because there's so much to do in Brockton. We have a professional baseball team, the Brockton Rocks, right? We have the Milton Museum, which is located now in downtown Brockton. If you want to see a Whistler, Remington, Picasso, Degas, you don't have to go into Boston. Come right downtown Brockton. Right. Fuller Craft Museum is nationally recognized, and that's in Brockton on Oak Street. DW Golf Course is one of the best municipal golf courses, not in Massachusetts, but in New England. So, you know, we have a lot of amenities in Brockton. We also have a lot of history, and I've talked about that, but we also have some wonderful healthcare facilities, right? We have three hospitals, the VA and Good Sam, and Signature Brockton Hospital, Brockton Neighborhood Health Center as well, that have all of those institutions have been wonderful partners during COVID. You know, and Brockton Public Schools is phenomenal. I mean, you can get a quality education, and you don't have, just have to be a student athlete. You could do drama or music or art. I mean, there's just so much offerings in Brockton. But also, you know, we're diverse, and we want to reflect what that's about. So we have so many different ethnic restaurants in Brockton that people can really taste different cuisines. And again, I'm just excited as a guy that grew up here. I mean, I recently, Kevin, had someone come in from Tennessee. He's a major investor in the United States of America, and he had Brockton on the radar. And he said to me, you know, Mayor, I can't believe you have a Starbucks and a Chick-fil-A at Westgate Mall. That says something. You know, little things add up, right? But perception's reality. So quality of life issues. I want the city to be clean. So I have our DPW guys and the street sweepers out every single day, many hours, because it does reflection what the city of Brockton is that I know. So, you know, and you know, you've worked here, Kevin, you know Brockton, it's in your fabric.
We're up there.
Yeah, I mean, you know it. It's in your fabric. So it's a special place. And I want to continue to work with everybody to make sure that we showcase it and we attract new people. But we also take care of those that are here and the businesses that are here. We never want to lose businesses. We want to add to the base, not subtract. And one thing is, to be an effective leader, you have to be a good listener. And that's what I've done. And I'm going to continue to do that. And I hope to continue to be your unofficial official co-host as we move into the next year as well.
Absolutely. And just to kind of throw in, you really threw a lot of things in there that is so Brockton, that Brockton offers. And you also have a college. You got a community college that offers, you know, low cost. If you're not sure if college is for you, you could start out there and then you could transfer to Bridgewater State University or to an Emerson. Not to mention they offer courses for workforce development. And if you're looking for a show that's inexpensive, I know they do a lot of theater productions over there as well. So that's just another gem in the large crown that is known as the City of Champions.
Yeah, they have a new president over there, and he's just a great, great, great guy, President DePasquale. He served as elected official up in Springfield, school committee, city council. I've met with him. I like him. He gets it. He understands that we're a city. You know, we're not a town. We're a city. Yep. But we have a town-like feeling. I mean, generational legacy people are still here, right? It kind of just keeps carrying on. And, you know, my own grandparents came to Brockton to work from Ireland to work in the factories. And, you know, it's just a reflection of what Brockton is. It's you know, they might knock us down, but they're not going to knock us out. We're going to get back and keep working and surging ahead. And, you know, Massasoit, and again, our friends in Easton with Stonehill College and Bridgewater State. I mean, you hit it on the head. And I also, you know, we have manufacturing, Concord Foods and Cindy's Kitchen, nationally recognized as a leading premier food manufacturing based in Brockton. And, you know, Harbor One Bank, one of the largest lending institutions in New England, corporate office based in Brockton. Shields MRI, Shields Healthcare, started here in Brockton. So there's a lot going on, and the opportunity zones are helping us, and the historic tax credits and the ties and the TIFs. We have a lot of tools in the toolbox. And as mayor, I'm going to continue to be an advocate for Brockton. That's the only way I know. And that's the only thing I'm going to do as mayor.
Mayor, I want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. And we'll look forward to the next time. We'll definitely have to have you on before Christmas.
Yeah, and I know I'll see you Thursday night at the Thursday morning at the parade. I know you'll be at Veterans. You're there all the time, Veterans Day parade. But for those listening that have served, thank you for your service. And if your loved one has passed and has served, I want to just thank you on behalf of the City of Champions. And Kevin, thank you for what you do. You're rocking it. You continue to rock it. And I'll look for that coffee mug in the near future.
You got it. There he is. Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, our guest, final guest of the evening. We want to thank not only our great sponsors, but also everybody who joined us this evening. Hey, I'm sorry, it's over for this evening, but I swear, if you come back next week at 6:15 p.m., we'll have more program. Until then, have a great night.